I'm not awesome. I'm an alcoholic. And it's nice to be here tonight. It's a privilege to come. First of all, can you hear all right? Everybody hear okay? Do they need it? They're giving me more volume. They're alcoholics. They always want more. Give them what they want. Okay. It's always a privilege to come and share out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's nice to see everybody tonight. For a bunch of sick people, you look pretty good to me. I don't know. And it's nice to be welcomed somewhere. You know, that was not always the case for me. I hit my bottom on the streets of Brooklyn, New York City, and I got sober there. And even in Brooklyn, they'd cross the street to the other side so they wouldn't have to pass me on the sidewalk. And I wasn't welcomed anywhere in that borough. And that's not the case today. You guys let me in here. And that's the only reason I'm here tonight, talking to you, is because of what's in this book and the people around it and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're going to talk about the doctor's opinion tonight. And since some of it's going to involve some medical science, and we will tell you some medical facts about your disease, I just want to caution you about that. It's nice to have knowledge about your illness. It's nice to know medical facts about the effects of alcohol and drugs in your body. But that knowledge will not keep you sober. I was aware of 90 to 95% of what I'm going to tell you as far as medical facts. And I assure you, it never stopped me drinking one time or using drugs. As a resident doctor, I often stood at the bedside of alcoholics and drug addicts in the intensive care unit, sometimes for 12 hours, sometimes for 2 days. I watched them bleed to death, die of infection, and all kinds of other things. Never stopped me drinking or using one time. In fact, some of them that we'd pull through, I'd run into them in the bars 4 or 5 weeks later, and we'd drink shots together. And I'd say, I'll see you back in the ICU, Charlie. Yeah! You know. So much for medical knowledge, okay? So we are gonna impart some medical knowledge tonight, but just because you know it and you understand it, I promise you, it will not keep you sober. But it may help you stay with this program. If you hear something tonight that you like, that's from my higher power and your higher power. If you hear something you don't like, that's from me, and I'm just a sick alcoholic, and you're going to have to deal with that as best you can. Call your sponsor or whatever. Don't get physical about it. That's too boring. Okay. Probably the most difficult part of the whole evening will be keeping the Roman numerals on the pages straight between the third and fourth editions. How many third editions in the room? Okay, good. All right, so third edition, we're going to start on XX triple I. Fourth edition, XXV. The fourth edition stays two Roman numerals ahead of the third edition, but if you're great at Roman numerals the way I am, I'm going to sing out the pages as we go. If I somehow lose you, just, you know, yell out and I'll stop and we'll recenter you. Please hold your questions. We'll have a question and answer period. I think we'll have a break. This thing runs for a little while, so we'll probably have a break in about 50, 60 minutes. Then we'll wrap it up and then we'll have questions and answers. And that's kind of the format we're going to use. Now, the doctor's opinion mostly uses the word alcohol, and despite the fact that this doctor was a specialist in treating alcoholics and drug addicts, so that's how he ended up. I'm kind of lazy, so I don't want, when I say alcohol, I don't want to have to say methamphetamine, heroin, benzodiazepines, Valium, Ativan, Vicodin, gasoline, squirrel shit, you know, whatever you guys like to do, you know. I don't want to have to say all that over and over again. I don't have to say Sara Lee Cake, Reno, Las Vegas, racehorses, and various sexual adventures that we won't bore you with. So, because we're not talking, we're talking about addiction tonight. And the doctor's opinion talks about addiction. And, you know, we're talking about the big five, okay? Drugs and alcohol, work, sex, food, money. Money's gambling, spending, debting, stealing, and all the behavior around acquiring and dispensing thereof. And those are the five main addictions. There's more, of course, but those are the big five. And when I say alcohol, I'm talking about the big five. Okay? Now, I don't know about you, but if you take my first choice is drugs and alcohol. If you take that away, then I'll go to number two. If you take number two away, I'll go to number three. If you take number three away, I'll go to number four. You take number five away, I'll go back to number one. Because I'm happiest doing all five at once. You know, so when I, you know, so, you know, when I say Jack Daniels or Thunderbird or Mad Dog, and you know, you're shooting heroin or you're eating a lot of Sara Lee Cake, sorry, I'm talking to you too. Okay? You're not, you know, just because I didn't name your drug of choice doesn't mean you're not included in the room tonight. Because this is about addiction. And Dr. Silkwood was the pioneer and the forerunner. And he's the one who wrote this section of the book. Okay. Who's Dr. Silkwood? Let's do a little bio on him and get you up to speed on who he was. Dr. Silkwood was a well-trained medical doctor, trained in New York City just before the First World War, around 1911-1912. And for that time in America, he was an extremely well-trained physician. Not interested in alcoholics, not interested in drug addicts, not interested in addiction, wasn't on his radar screen, didn't exist in the language of medical science except for a few scattered articles. Dr. Silkwood trained first as a neurologist. Now that's a doctor who studies the diseases of the brain and spinal cord. And then he trained as a psychiatrist. And that's a doctor who studied the diseases of the intellect and the emotions. So Dr. Silkworth was a neuropsychiatrist, a double specialist, trained at Columbia, NYU, did his clinical training at Bellevue. Bellevue, a very famous hospital in New York City, still is to this day. Very well-trained doctor for America at the turn of the century before the First World War. And he practiced neuropsychiatry very successfully in New York City for a number of years. Then, in 1929, came the stock market crash, the banks failed, and the Great Depression began. Now, back in those days, medicine, especially high-powered medicine, the kind of medicine that Dr. Silkworth practiced, was pretty much on a cash basis. There wasn't Sierra Care and I Don't Care and They Don't Care and all that other stuff we have today. So his practice dried up overnight. The banks failed. He lost all his money and his savings. The stock market crashed. Any investments he had were gone, washed away. He was penniless. And he joined the millions of Americans pounding the pavement looking for work. And he was willing to accept anything he could get his hands on. And in his job search, he was offered the directorship of the town's hospital in Manhattan in New York City. And he was offered the medical directorship for $40 a week, room and board, which in the Great Depression was a pretty good deal. And the town's hospital was a very unusual hospital at that time in America. There were probably only 12 or 15 hospitals like it in the entire world. And it was a hospital devoted to the inpatient care, the in-house care, the alcoholic, and the drug addict. Now, these hospitals were unusual because most hospitals in America and in the world wouldn't have an alcoholic or a drug addict on the premises for any reason, especially not admit him to an inpatient bed. In fact, in America at that time, there were 23 states in the Union which had statutes on the books that forbade admission of any alcoholic or drug addict to a hospital that received public funds. So you see, guys, you don't pay your bills, you're not welcome, you know. But that was the situation at that time. And so this hospital was pretty unusual because it was devoted solely to alcoholics and drug addicts and admitted them to the hospital and tried to take care of them. And Dr. Silker was offered the job as medical director. Now, what does that mean? Well, today, these days, if you're a medical director of a department, you got a big office, you got a couple secretaries, you probably got 10 or 15 resident doctors, you probably got 100 nurses, and then you got 7 or 8 administrators that, you know, you're at war with. You got computers, and, you know, you probably pick up your stethoscope once a year. You know, you're almost like a high-powered executive. Well, this is not the case for Dr. Silver. He is the medical director of the town's hospital, and he is the only doctor on the property. Period. He's it. He's got a couple nurses, 3 big, tough orderlies, and 100 patients. And that's it. Now remember, this is 1930, okay? New York City, 1930. There's no, except for Salvation Army and a couple of missions, there's no detox. There's no paramedics. There's no outreach. It's a wasteland out there as far as alcoholic and drug addicts are concerned. So Dr. Silkworth's going to get us right off the battlefield, fresh on the hook. No one touched him, you know. They're going to haul him in from wherever, and they're going to drop him in Dr. Silkworth's lap, and he's going to be the man, okay? He is going to have to take care of these people from beginning to end. Now, he's not trained to do this. He's a good doctor. He's a dedicated physician. But he doesn't have a clue, okay? And he just starts taking care of these patients. And he develops a way of managing them that was very, very forward-looking, very pioneering, and actually has become a paradigm, the medical model of management of addiction and alcoholism. First, medically supervised detox. And Dr. Silkworth was one of the first people to use drugs on alcoholics to try to prevent them from going into DT. He was one of the first people to use barbiturates. And we can still use his method today quite successfully, although we have maybe better drugs. That's arguable. Anyway, medically supervised detox, and then he's got to take care of all of the consequences of use and abuse. Delirium tremens, seizures, liver failure, every kind of infection known to man, pneumonia, and, you know, they were shooting back then, too. You guys aren't cool or anything, you know, you're not slick on them. You got nothing on them. They were doing speedballs. You know, they were doing it all. They were shooting in every orifice just like we are today. So Dr. Silkworth had all those infections to deal with. And then broken up bones, stitches, you know, the whole bit by himself, okay? Consequences of use and abuse. then if you didn't die in those two stages, and a lot did in those days, he'd give you some nutritional and physical therapy. And for those of few of you who've been in rehab, you know about that. They take you to walk you around the block, or they walk you on a flight deck on the roof, or and then they tell you to eat your Cheerios and take your vitamin pill. Okay, so you guys know all about that. Nutritional and physical therapy. And then when he got the patient to the point where he could remember his name, knew it was Cheerios he had for breakfast, and the Cheerios stayed down, then Dr. Silkworth would do some cutting-edge psychiatric therapy. You know, he'd plead with him, he'd try to scare him, he'd try to reason with him about no more using or drinking. And then he discharged them from the hospital and arranged for close medical follow-up to supervise them very carefully. And this actually has become what you may have heard bandied about as the medical model for addiction and alcohol. Supervised detox, medical therapy for consequences, nutritional and physical intervention, psychological counseling, sociological counseling, close follow-up. Using this paradigm, using this method, Dr. Silkworth treated about 41,000 drug addicts and alcoholics. And his success rate using this model, and by success I mean total abstinence from all mood-elevating chemicals, no drinking, no using, and return to productive place in society. That means go to work, take care of the household, be a father, be a mother, be a brother, be a son. Restore you to citizenship. Success. Dr. Silkworth's success with this therapy was 1-2%. Okay? Now you got a picture of what's going on. I mean, these people come in, Dr. Silkworth's the only doctor, 24-7, he takes them through this whole thing, he discharges them, they go out, they drink, they come back. They go through this again, they go out, they drink, they use, they come back. And on the third time through, usually the third time through, Dr. Silkworth would sit them down, and he would say to them something like this: I am sorry. I have done everything which you know to medical science. You have completely failed all therapeutic efforts. I have nothing further to offer you. Unless you are locked up or hire a bodyguard, you are going to die of heart failure in delirium tremens, or you will develop a wet brain and be insane within about 1 year. You are a hopeless case. The author of this book, he said those exact words to him. Can you imagine how many times he had to say that? 41,000 patients declaring his patients hopeless, the ones who made it. Can you imagine how many times he had to go out and say, I'm sorry, we didn't get him in time. His liver was too far gone, he bled to death. I'm sorry, I know your wife is a wonderful woman. I know you have 3 beautiful children, but she has a wet brain. She will be insane for the rest of her life. You're going to have to take her upstate and lock her up permanently. I'm sorry, I know you loved your brother very much. We got to him too late. The delirium tremens was too bad. His heart couldn't take it, and he's dead. Can you imagine how many times he had to say this to family, to patients? I mean, 41,000 patients and 1%. I think that's called failure. Smyrna. Why am I dwelling on this dark story? I mean, why are we talking about this dismal situation? Dr. Silkworth really cared about it. And this total failure and the way everything just fell apart, he got to a point where he was desperate. And he was willing to try anything that might help us. So when the author of this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, a man who he had declared hopeless. Now, we all know what hopeless is, not only. Medical science has nothing further to offer you. We have tried everything. We have nothing further to give you. Unless you're locked up or hire a bodyguard in 1 year, adios. That's hopeless, okay? He declared Bill Wilson hopeless in front of his wife. And when he saw this patient, Bill Wilson, who wrote this book, Get Better, by the application of spiritual principles, it really got Dr. Silkworth's attention. To the point, and it got his attention because he knew it was real. Dr. Silkworth was a very well-trained psychiatrist. He knew a lot about spiritual phenomenon, spiritual experiences, and spiritual awakening. And when Bill Wilson had his spiritual experience in the hospital, Silkworth didn't go up to him and say, you know, you're just hallucinating. Here, I'm going to give you some drugs. You know, these drunks are all the same. He didn't do that. Okay? He didn't do that. He sat Bill down. Oh, yeah. By the way, turn off your pagers and cell phones. I'll hear it and I'll run out the room. I'll think they're pagers. When Bill had his spiritual experience, Dr. Silkworth sat him down. He did a full neurologic status examination on him. He did a psychiatric status examination on him and interviewed him carefully for 45 minutes. And he was convinced the man had had a sudden spiritual transformation. So convinced that he actually turned Bill Wilson loose on his patient. As a lay therapist. Now, this is New York City in the 1930s. This is East Coast. East Coast is narrow-minded, closed-minded, arrogant, hard-bound, unforgiving, intolerant. Not like Huggy Bear, feely-touchy California. You know. So, when Silkworth turned a lay therapist loose on his in-house psychiatric patient, the medical society wanted to lynch him. But he persisted because he knew it was real and he knew this patient Bill Wilson had gotten better. So that's the background for the doctor's opinion. Okay? This doctor's opinion that we're going to talk about tonight, this is not some theory. This is not some smart-ass idea that some halfway educated people thought up in the library. This doctor's opinion is written in blood, sweat, and tears. This is not really an opinion. This is a testimony. This is a witness to real events and real history. And it's a very, very powerful document because it is based entirely on real day-to-day experience. Okay. So that's the background. Okay. So we'll start with the doctor's opinion here, and we'll start with the first paragraph. There's a sentence there right in the middle of the first paragraph. Convincing testimony must surely come from medical men who have had experience with the sufferings of our members. The key word is experience. And these are the AAs introducing Dr. Silkwood. And we've gone over his experience, okay? Experience of the suffering of our members and have witnessed our return to health. And now Dr. Silkwood is going to give us a little introductory letter here. And the doctor writes, "To whom it may concern, I have specialized in the treatment of alcoholism for many years." What an understatement. 41,000 patients, okay? 41,000 patients in the old-fashioned medical model. Oh, and by the way, if you go through the medical model today, they might get you a 3% recovery, as opposed to Dr. Silkwood's 1 to 2%. Because a few people will probably slip into AA on them. After Dr. Silkwood combined his medical model with Bill Wilson's 12 steps and started letting other alcoholics try to take alcoholics and addicts through the 12 steps while they were in the hospital, within a year or so, the success rate, now remember the success rate is total abstinence and return to a functional place in society. The success rate went to 55%. By 2 years, it was approaching 75%, and within 4 years, it was up over 80%, 85%. And in the hands of some groups, it was pushing 90%. And Dr. Silkwood took care of another 15,000 alcoholics in that fashion with those successful numbers. So, did he specialize in alcoholism for many years? He sure did. He sure did. In late 1934, he says, I attended a patient, Bill Wilson, the author of this book, who, though he'd been a competent businessman, was an alcoholic of a type I had come to regard as hopeless. Now, we all know what hopeless is, don't we? Medical science has nothing to offer you. No human system has anything to offer you. No human aid will help you. You are a hopeless case. And he had come to regard this guy as hopeless, and he declared him hopeless in the course of his third treatment. But he says, during this treatment, he developed certain ideas and a possible means of recovery. And then, as part of these ideas, he tried to impress this on other alcoholics. Last sentence there in the paragraph. This man, Bill Wilson, the author of this book, and over 100 others appear to have recovered. Wait a minute. We got 100 hopeless drug addicts and alcoholics, and they're all better? Is that what you're telling us, Dr. Silkwood? And he says, yeah, next paragraph. I personally know scores of cases. The score is 20, so he's talking 40, 60, one-on-one, up close and personal, who were of the type with whom other methods had failed completely. Medical science failed completely. They're all better. That's a miracle. I don't know what else to call it. That's a miracle. These facts appear to be of extreme medical importance. Well, that's a prophetic statement. It brought comfort and relief to over 2 million people since he wrote that line. And he says, because of the extraordinary possibilities of the rapid growth, this may be a remedy for thousands. It turned out to be millions. And then he closes his little letter with a statement. You may rely absolutely on anything they say about themselves. Rely absolutely on a drug addict or an alcoholic? What? One's an alcoholic lying when his lips are moving. Right? As I remember this guy said, you know, he was talking at an Al-Anon meeting, and he said, He said, you know, you want to know how not to get him to lie to you all the time? And the lady said, yeah, what do I do? He said, lady, don't ask him those stupid questions. Like, where were you last night? If he can remember, he can't tell you. And on and on and on. You may rely absolutely on anything they say about themselves. So we're not just talking about abstinence from drugs and alcohol. We are talking about personal transformation. We are talking about the total reversal of personality and character of an individual as the result of a treatment for disease. That's pretty strange. Okay. And we'll get into that a little more. Okay. And just so you're with me, third edition we're on XXIV, and fourth edition we're at XXVI. Okay. Now this page here is just the AA's kind of bridging into the main part of the doctor's opinion. And they mention the allergy and so forth, which we'll get into quite a bit in just a little bit. But I just want to call your attention to the last paragraph on this page. It's a prophetic paragraph, although the AA's wrote it, they didn't realize that it was. Though we work out our solution on the spiritual as well as the altruistic plane, we favor hospitalization for the alcoholic or drug addict who is very jittery or defogged. It is imperative that a man's brain be cleared before he is approached and therefore has a better chance of accepting what we have to offer, In other words, medical detox and medical therapy first, spirituality second. And a lot of you, I hope all of you, will work with alcoholics, drug addicts, and some of you will go on wet call. You know, you go on a wet call and walk in there, and here's this guy, and he's got about an inch and a half left in that half-gallon jug of red wine. Got a bunch of methamphetamine dust all over the table. Got a loaded .44 pistol. He's throwing up blood in his puke bucket over here. And you walk in and you say, Charlie, how you doing? And he goes, you know, I'm doing pretty good, except for that dragon coming out of the ventilator over there. Don't take this guy to an AA meeting, okay? Don't sit down with this guy and say, you know, Dr. Silkworth is a well-trained position in New York City in 1911. I mean, no, 911, 5150 this guy before he kills you, himself, or somebody else. Medical therapy first, AA second. The AAs at that time, based on their experience, wrote this, and it has become the standard and paradigm all over the world. So, very prophetic statement there. Okay. Next page. Third edition is XXV. Fourth edition is XXVII. And we'll now start into the main body of the doctor's opinion. First sentence there. After it says, the doctor writes, the subject presented in this book, that's the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, seems to me to be of paramount importance to those afflicted with alcoholic addiction. Two little ideas here. First of all, paramount. What's paramount? picture company, right? Yeah. That's what I thought it was. My sponsor made me look it up. The Paramount's the highest mountain in a range of mountains, and it dominates the entire range. It's the most significant, powerful peak in a range of mountains. To those afflicted with alcoholic addiction, note the use of the word addiction in the early 1930s, way ahead of its time, a unifying concept that alcohol is a type of addiction amongst many addictions. Heroin, morphine, cocaine, benzodiazepines, food, gambling, sex, work, on and on and on and on. So what he's saying in this one little sentence is that the information contained in this book is the most dominant, powerful body of information in the entire field of addiction therapy. And I submit to you that is true tonight as we sit here. And we'll go into that. All right. You hold that thought and drop down about 1, 2, 3 paragraphs from there. And Dr. Silkworth makes this statement. He says, what with our ultra-modern standards, our scientific approach to everything, we being doctors, nurses, hospitals, medical science, we are perhaps not well equipped to apply the powers of good that lie outside our synthetic knowledge. Synthetic knowledge. What's synthetic? Synthetic is man-made. Medical science is man-made. We are perhaps not well equipped to apply the powers of good, read spiritual awakening or spiritual experience. He's saying we, the hospitals and doctors, are not very good at guiding the individual on a spiritual path. Now let's take a modern day example of what Dr. Silkworth is talking about. One of our future brothers is—he's out on a little toot, you know, and he's not doing anything real fancy, you know. He's drinking some red wine, he's doing some methamphetamines, and he's smoking a little grass to kind of keep his wings straight and his flaps, you know, level, trying to stay in the zone, you know. But he's not doing anything, you know, fancy. And he's a—he's a typical, a brilliant young alcoholic addict with a, you know, very keen, incisive mind, knows all the answers. And despite the fact that he has an acute, active, intellectual, alcoholic mind, he makes a small mistake on this little party that he's having, and he runs out of money. But since he's got a really good, intellectual, alcoholic mind, good drug addict thinker, he comes up with this brilliant plan to correct his temporary financial shortfall and decides to rob the 7-Eleven in his neighborhood where he's been a customer for many years. So he goes home and he gets his pistol. Now the proprietor of this establishment has been robbed many times and he's getting a little sick of these guys coming in and robbing him. So our brilliant young future member walks into the 7-Eleven, walks up to the register, points the pistol at the proprietor and says, give me your money. And the proprietor smiles and says, sure. He opens the register, he takes out the folding money, and drops it on the floor. And our brilliant, keen, intellectual alcoholic robber bends over, picks up the money, and when he stands up, the proprietor shoots him in the chest 3 times. Pop, pop, pop. Nothing personal, okay? And he, you know, he's he's getting tired of getting robbed by these guys. So he goes, should I let him bleed to death on the floor? I'm a nice guy. I'll call the cops. So he calls 911. The cops know it's a gunshot wound, so they activate the medical rescue system. They arrive, paramedics arrive, and here we go. Paramedics throw in all the lines and tubes. They scream for the medevac, land the chopper in the street. We load him up. We take him to the trauma center. We throw him in on the gurney. We crack his chest in the ER. We stick our hands in there. We stop the bleeding. We take him up on the heart-run machine. We fix him. Put him in the ICU. He gets every complication known to man. But he's got resident doctors around the clock, beautiful nurses, sometimes two. We get him through it. We get him out on the ward. We save his life. He's ready to go home. He knows his name. He knows where he is. He knows it's Cheerios he had for breakfast. And none of the Cheerios are coming out of any of the holes that we fixed. Okay? This guy's ready to go home. So before he leaves, in walks a social worker. And she says, Mr. Smith, I just wanted to tell you about this wonderful program we have here at this hospital for people who have problems with drugs and alcohol. And he goes, wait a minute, lady. You're not talking to me. I don't have any problems with drugs and alcohol. And she says, but Mr. Smith, you are in the process of committing an armed robbery under the influence of drugs and alcohol. Don't you see that as a mistake? And he goes, lady, the only mistake I made was bending over to pick up that money. Well, give me that form and I'm out of here. He signs himself out of the hospital. Where does he go? Dealer, bar, whichever's closer. We just spent $2 million on this guy. I mean, heart-run machine, helicopters, paramedics, nurses, doctors, all kinds of drugs and antibiotics and intensive care units. And what impact did we have on his primary disease process? Not a zero zip. Is his primary disease process a gunshot wound in the chest? No. It's alcoholism and drug addiction. It's addiction. And we have this monolith of medical science applied to this human being. And we didn't do it. Dr. Silkworth said, what with our ultra-modern standards, our scientific approach to everything, we are not well equipped to apply the powers of good that lie outside our synthetic knowledge. So that sentence of his is true as we sit here tonight. Okay. Finding? Okay. Okay. Then if you'll go drop down from there to the last paragraph on this page, starting with later. Dr. Silkworth, again, says he let Bill Wilson and some of the other alcoholics who got better help him with his patients, and that he followed their cases through. And he says many of them are interesting. In fact, many of them are amazing. He uses the word amazing. Try and find that word in a medical journal sometime. Amazing results, yeah. And then he says, he closes his paragraph, they believe in themselves and still more in the power. Notice the word power is capitalized. Try to find that in a medical journal sometime. They believe in themselves and still more in the power, which pulls chronic alcoholics back from the gates of death. Dr. Silkworth is testifying to a miracle. That's what he's doing right here. He's saying, I declare these people hopeless. I did everything I could for them. I couldn't help them. They turned to this power that I I think is real, but I don't understand. And this power made them better. I don't know how this happened. I don't know how it works. I'm just here tonight to tell you that it's real. Okay. Next page. XXVI in the third edition, XXV triple I in the fourth edition. Why is this so? What's wrong with us? Why are we hopeless? How come we can't go to our family doctor, get some pills, take them for 14 days, and be okay? Why can't medical science help us? All medical science can do for us is keep us alive most of the time. Why is that so? And Dr. Silkwood figured out why that was so. He figured out what the problem was. He figured out what was wrong with us by sitting at the bedside of tens of thousands of suffering, dying patients and paying a lot of attention to what happened. And I think that's a good spot to break. And then we'll come back and we'll get into it.